Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 20, and NASDAQ Futures up 82. Looks like we're going to try and go up, at least for the first part of this week. We'll see that how that works out. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do.
All right, bud, and you managed to avoid the floods?
Well, yeah. You know, it's part of the intelligent selection of a place to live includes environmental risk. And so, you know, I mean, some people think that stream behind their house is really pretty and they want to live right on it. Okay.
Yeah.
You do that. I mean, I willingly accepted the risk of hurricanes when I lived in Florida because I lived on the water. And I knew exactly what I was doing. But even there, I was pretty careful in terms of selecting which particular house I bought, because that risk is highly variable, and you know, which direction you're facing matters, what's its base elevation matters, you know, those sorts of things. Oh, by the way, the several trees that are within the fall line of your roof got saw, use it early. I mean there's, you know, there's things you could do, but this place is halfway up a ridge, a relatively small ridge, but a ridge nonetheless, and is at an elevation. It's not very far from the French Broad River, which can flood. However, if we actually get wet here, boy, Noah has come to do a reprise.
Yeah.
So I'm not very worried. Now, of course, you know, you can't do anything about high wind and, you know, places that really aren't engineered for. But on the other hand, we don't get hurricanes. But you know, you can get a tornado. Not a lot you can do about that one.
No. So. And, you're in the middle of an area. Maybe, I'm sure you know this, they had the biggest earthquake ever in the country.
Well, actually, no. That's we're far enough away from that. You're talking about New Madrid.
Well, I mean, you're not any further than Chicago, and the whole Midwest got nailed.
We would certainly feel it, but the odds of it doing serious damage here are extremely long. Now, if you happen to be anywhere near Memphis, oh boy.
Yeah.
Well. Okay. And incidentally, Nashville is close enough that there could be trouble there. If it really lets go, Nashville and the area around it could be, especially west of Nashville, could be serious trouble. But this area here, we'd certainly know what happened. There'd be no doubt about that. There was about a Mag 3 or so up near Bristol, which is not, you know, it's a couple hours from here by car, and I felt it.
I was right there. I was driving home from Arizona with a truck I bought, and all the hotel, I was in a, you know, not a great hotel, and all of a sudden the whole thing starts shaking. I go, is this an earthquake? I could probably deal with that. I hope it's not a tornado. This place don't look so hot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no. I was in my office, and I was like, hey, that's a Templar.
Well, what so. I did read, I actually read a, this is when you used to have in Midway. Quite as long, how long ago this was? I was going to New York for the CBOE.
Sure.
And the magazine they used to use, they put the thing in front of you, was the Chicago Magazine back when it was a really magazine.
Sure. Yeah.
They must have done 20, 30, 40 page expose on earthquakes and who could get them and where and what buildings. And they started with the New Madrid thing. For those who don't know, there was it 1860, 1870, somewhere in there. The single biggest earthquake ever hit the U.S. was in New Madrid, Illinois, right? Is it Illinois or Indiana? I think it's Illinois.
The fault is basically right near where Memphis is.
I thought it was in Illinois, but
it is. But it's it's north. Well, Tennessee's not a very tall state,
right?
Okay, but the thing is there weren't a whole lot of people there when it happened.
Okay, well,
now there are.
But it's a. The difference, it was they went into great detail regarding when you talk about an earthquake along the San Andreas or something, you have two continental plates,
right,
that are constantly moving a little bit. They move a little bit, and finally they'll move 100 yards or something in one yank, and that's a massive earthquake, right, or it might be 200 yards. And then they go back, and it's good for a while, and then it builds up more pressure. So
the rock locks up, and then when it breaks, that's your earthquake. Yeah.
But in this one, this wasn't a slipping sideways. It was slipping down. One was over the other, or something along those lines. But the thing of it is, if you have an earthquake in California, it's a very mountainous region. You might have a 6.5 or 7, which is a lot, but 50 miles away, it's down to a 4 or 5. Maybe not 50 miles, but It dissipates fairly rapidly. But the one in the middle, this one, didn't. It knocked off. It was like an 8 here, but it was like a 6.5 in Boston or something.
I don't know about that.
It stopped church bells in Boston.
Yeah, here the estimates are that we'd have somewhere around a 4.5 or 5, which is enough to wake you up pretty good, but it's not going to bring down buildings.
But how did it turn? Actually, flip the Mississippi the wrong way for a few hours or something. What was that all about?
Because it changes it changes where everything lays. So anything water based, of course, is flowing, right?
Yeah.
And so the water flows until it equilibriates, and it would be. It would certainly be a serious problem. The biggest issue is that one has a history of producing monsters very infrequently, but it does. It will happen again. And when it does, all the way to Memphis, on one side, but then as far as Nashville, you're in the serious structural damage range.
I think this article is all about Chicago, and they started talking about the different buildings. Like the one I'm in is like a 110-year-old brick, Chicago brick.
Right.
It basically has tremendous stress issue, top to bottom. You can, because it's like three layers of brick side to side.
Sideways, not so much. Right.
When you see a new brick building going up, and you see those little aluminum things that look like they're into one level of brick, then they kind of come up and go into the next level of brick next to them, those are actually earthquakes. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, you have to have that reinforcement, or else brick will collapse. And an unreinforced block is got the same problem.
But they were saying that your places like I refuse to call it the Willis Tower, the Sears Tower, and what I would say the First National Bank building, which is now whatever the hell the thing is,
right?
And the Hancock building, those things are buried into the bedrock, and even though they would be shaking like a mother.
They wouldn't come down.
They're fine, but the ones that are built on caissons, even though they're built to slide, I'm not so sure it'll slide far enough.
there could be all kinds of trouble. The other thing that could happen is all your bridges, across the Chicago River would probably be severely damaged or destroyed. There's certainly. And it will happen. And the thing is that people in that part of the country, it's been so long, and they don't even think about it. I mean, I doubt that anybody has strapping. I mean, like around here, I'm not so worried about it. But like over towards Memphis, I'm willing to bet that things like like hot water heaters are not strapped. And God help you with something like that in an earthquake. It's going to be, the building moves, the water heater doesn't. It smashes through whatever it happens to be near, right? Just because of the inertia.
Oh, and you have the open gas line. which isn't a...
Well, and then, yeah, now you got an open gas line, and then you get a fire, right, or an explosion. And, yeah, so, I mean, it would be a very bad day. That's for sure. I have a question for you. How do you like this latest thing that has shown up with the Social Security database?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff that's sort of in there. You kind of wanted to, all the stuff that's going on, Carl. I mean, nobody would like an audit of just about every place every now and then, since we go through them here.
Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's a bad idea. But in fact, I think it's actually a very good idea. But okay. The idea that the way our co-presidents are going about it is exactly the wrong way to go about management. It's exactly the wrong way.
Okay.
It breeds into their message to people. And it breeds hatred. I mean, you can argue. All the other guys in the show can argue, but you guys. It breeds hatred. These people are wrong. They're mostly hired by Democrats. They're useless. Get them to bleep out of here. They don't do anything anyway. That message to me is horrendous. And you know what? And nobody's ever gonna change my mind on that. As much as you guys, not you personally, but people are trying. It's just not the way to do business.
Let me tell you. Let me give you my. You know, I'm a data scientist. Okay, I've built networks and computer systems for 40 years. I've seen the evolution of the entire thing from punch cards and bag tape. Okay, I mean that's where I started.
You knew how to do it and I didn't. So there's the difference.
But that's how I started programming. That's how the first money I ever made doing something on a computer was literally hacking the machine code in a Burroughs bookkeeping machine for my father's place. He was a CPA joint. Okay. They want $3,000 to cut a new tape that had a change in a tax rate. You know, think about the stupidity of this. All right, I mean, we're talking about a paper tape that you used to load operating code. Right?
Well, I saw people do it, so when I say yeah, I saw people. I couldn't have done it, but.
Well, I'm just saying they want $3,000 for a rolled up paper tape that you used to load the operating program because it didn't have any. There was no such thing as a disk. Nobody had that kind of money except the government at that time. And so that was how it worked, and you know, it did the ledger, it did the payroll, and you picked up the last line on the card that went in the printer, and that's where it got the base numbers to make the calculations from. Okay, so I say, you know, pretty simple stuff. I mean, it was essentially a glorified adding machine that had a program. All right, fine. So that's how far back I go with this stuff. So I understand how these systems originally were built the way that they that they were built. There was, when you originally had Social Security, when it was originally passed and put into force, there was no online rotating storage. There were no modern databases, right? They didn't exist. All right. But the first people that could afford mass storage where referential integrity could be enforced was the government. Because they have more money than God, right? So they were the first place that had access to that sort of capacity. IBM's original mainframes, the first widely known database was called DB2. DB2 has unique indices, but does not have referential integrity, does not have constraints. So, which is a problem, because you need them for this sort of thing. All right? It wasn't there. But SQL showed up in the 1980s. I rewrote the customer management system for my company in the mid-1990s on one of the free versions of it. Oracle was the first one, okay? But Postgres was one that you didn't have to pay for.
You know, Oracle was we had some other kind of big machine at the Seaboat. It stored all it was a big data storage, a big, huge white box.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, look, the original, the disk drives, they used to be the size of a washing machine, for crying out loud. All right, they were god-awful expensive, and they had to be in air-conditioned rooms and conditioned space because the tiniest speck of dust that got in there would cause it to explode. And so, I mean, there, you know, this was the real deal. Nowadays, it still has to be just as clean, but it's a sealed container. That's why, you know, you can actually carry around a laptop with one or have a desktop computer, and they don't blow up all the time. But this was, you know, this was the deal. So, I mean, they had to go through atmospheric purge cycles when they started up and all this. It was very, very, very complicated stuff and extremely expensive. But somewhere in the area of the mid-1990s, this sort of capability from a data processing standpoint became reasonable. It became available to ordinary human beings and ordinary corporations like mine, small firms. Okay, and nobody during all of this time in Washington, D.C., it is now apparent in any of the systems, in the Treasury systems, in the Social Security systems, in the Medicare systems, in the Medicaid systems, in none of these computer systems, did they go through and bring that data into a modern processing environment and do the deduplication and the cleanup of the data in the first place. Okay, they never did it. Now, you could argue whatever you want about where things were, and I understand how it happened originally because it had to. When these things were on mag tape, you couldn't do that kind of thing.
There's a dramatic difference in dealing with the Social Security people than it was 15 years ago. Everything, the stuff is on, the systems have to be better. I mean,
the point is they're not.
Well, it sure.
And you know what?
You don't have to go to Social Security office anymore to apply or anything. I mean,
I understand. I get that. But the point is, look, Treasury, the executive, I don't care if it's a Democrat or a Republican who's in office. Treasury is under the executive. All right. You cannot, in any public company, in any company that's larger than stuff kept in a shoebox. All general ledger transactions have a debit and a credit. They have to be exactly equal on opposite sides. All right, this is the basic principles of accounting. You cannot process a payment without the offsetting account in GL that comes out of. And yet, Treasury has been doing exactly that for the last 20 years. Social Security has been doing it for the last 20 years. They've been putting vouchers through this payment system without the ability to tie them back to the authorization and the actual appropriation from Congress. And they've been doing it repeatedly, both Democrats and Republicans, and nobody has fixed it.
Okay,
and that, Chief, is a felony.
It is intentional fraud. I'm not disagreeing with any of this stuff. Here's my concern is one of total difference in that. How can I do this? Because I love you, man. People, including you, have been, and maybe me too, the people who are talking to us, I won't say lying, the Trump-Musk gang, they've been not only defining the problems to us, and everybody jumps on the problem to where it's probably bigger than it really ought to be. They're blowing the thing up in our minds, then they're telling you that they have solved it without any audit of them. I went through...
No, they haven't solved anything yet.
But I went through...
still at the point of identifying.
I know. I went through this weekend. I found some stuff from way back. Office of Management and Budget and those people in the Bush era identified what they felt were... I think when Bush started, and this is not a slap at Bush, this is just the facts, man, as far as I can see them. They identified like $95 billion when he started office in government waste, okay?
Yeah.
And when he left, it was, you know, 105 or some crap.
Zero got fixed.
Okay, what I'm going with this is the number was roughly 3% of their expenses.
That they know about.
Well, okay, but I'm saying today, nobody, when you pay taxes, I could be cheaper than you when it comes to this girl. Hey, when you pay taxes, all I do is think about, you know, some wasted stuff. Well, today, the number's up to, actually, the government part is like $300 billion or something.
Oh, no, that was 2016.
All right, but then you add in another they think a couple hundred billion got stolen by people in COVID through PPPs and stuff. Right. So, but I'm saying the number is still right about 3%. And you and I would like nothing better than that number to be, we both know it's never going to be zero. We'd like nothing better for that number to be 2% or 1.5% or something. But we both know it's never going to be zero. And my concern is that if you and I were in office together, boy, that'd be the two pro-councils, wouldn't it? You and me?
Chief.
I mean, how much of our, with all the other stuff that's there, how much of our time all day long would we elect to spend to drive that number down from 2 to 3 to 2.5 or 2?
Chief, it's not 3. This is where you're wrong.
Okay, I did the math. I can still do that.
Well, I know. But
what's $400 billion divided by how many trillion?
Hold on a minute. You're making an assumption here.
I'm just using their numbers.
I know you are. They're making an assumption. So in 2016, I've got the Senate Committee on the Budget's document that they produced. 2016. Okay, so I mean, you know, hey, that's 8 years ago, right? Nine years ago. They identified 300. Now, this is just what they know about.
But who's they?
The Senate Committee on the Budget.
Okay.
This is the Senate.
I know. Okay. That's the numbers I was trying to use.
Right. Well, yeah. This is not the same thing as OMB or the GAO. The GAO is supposed to be the auditing arm of the government.
Yeah.
Okay. That's their job. All right. But, you know, the Congress is supposed to have oversight over this stuff, right? I mean, that's how this works, is Congress appropriates money and Treasury spends on what Congress tells it to spend. That's the constitutional process. That's how it's supposed to work. In 2016, the Senate Committee on the Budget identified $310 billion. So you have to look at this against the size of the government in 2016, not as it is today, on expired programs. Now, that is, every penny of that is fraud.
I don't know what we're arguing. We're not arguing about anything. But
now hold on a minute. That is with the effed up data systems that cannot tie back transactions to actual appropriations. It cannot tie back transactions in the case of Social Security people. Okay, the Social Security system has 60 million. Active numbers that are not in the master death list, they're marked active in the system, more than there are human beings in the United States. 20%. Look, I'm not saying that all of those are being used for fraud and being paid, because obviously they're not. Okay.
All I know is a few deaths I've had in the family before you even get somebody out of the undertaker, the check stops.
Oh, Chief. When my mother died, I had POA for her for several years because, you know, as her health started to fail and her mind was, you know, not as sharp as it was, she asked me to do her accounting for her. Okay, you know, fairly standard thing that happens in families when people get older, right? Before I made the original arrangements, she lived in Michigan when she passed. We were up there, we made the original arrangements, then I had to come back down to Florida. In the couple of days it took me to make those original arrangements with the funeral home and such, and drive back to Florida, when I got back to Florida, there was a letter in my mailbox from the Social Security Administration saying, by the way, she's dead.
Yeah.
No kidding, right? I mean, that's how it, and her death had occurred as they were processing the payment. They say, oh, by the way, we clawed back the last Social Security payment, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it was, you know, and sure enough, when I went and looked in the, you know, the bank account, yep, they had.
Well, got a couple minutes coming. You know, here's when you go about doing this, and you and I don't think we've ever agreed more the people doing it, it's almost like a Ponzi thing where they're going to define the problem for you, focus on it, when there's all kinds of other problems. Now, this is a big problem. I get it. Any kind of waste when you're broke is a problem. They're going to focus you on the problem. They're going to declare this massive victory, and they're going to declare who the thieves are. Okay, the day these two people, and I'm nice when I say people, the day these two people come up and say, wow, we've determined that 10,000 checks are going to Republican farmers, redneck farmers someplace that they shouldn't get, and we're going after them, is the day I believe these people. They'll never do it.
No. See, I think you're dead wrong about that.
Well, we'll see. Because the villains are people who work for the government. Right?
Okay. No, that's not necessary. That is not completely true.
I listen to the news all day long.
Well, I know you listen to the news. That's part of your problem.
Okay.
I'm looking at where they're actually digging, what they've actually found. When you find 60 million Social Security numbers that are active in the system but are ghosts.
All right.
That is going to include an awful lot of people that don't work for the government.
I love you, man, so I wouldn't sentence you to this. Somehow I ended up 2 minutes in front of, the hell's the, Newsmax?
Oh, God.
The hatred drivel that comes out of there. I hope you don't have an idea.
Chief,
but I mean, every single sentence. It's these dirty Democrats. They're the people that hired these people in Washington.
Yeah,
They voted for Biden. They deserve to be fired. Every one of them is a screw up. I mean, it is the most vitriol I've ever seen against American citizens in my life, and
well,
it's not healthy.
Then you haven't been on CNN in the last, you know, 3 weeks, because I make a point of reading the other side's stuff every now and then, or looking at anything that Rachel Maddow has put out.
They can't possibly have the personal hatred towards people that these guys do.
Oh, yes.
I'm not talking about politicians. There's no question that.
No, I'm not talking about politicians either. I'm talking about so-called news people.
No, what I'm talking about is the every single one of these people who gotten fired is a Democratic hire. They're a Biden voter, and if we dropped them all in the lake, it wouldn't make any difference.
Well,
it is amazingly personal toward the people we're firing. It has nothing to do with, of course, Biden's mentioned every sentence and a dirty Democrat, but Democrats don't even deserve a job in government, according to these guys, because they voted for the wrong people.
Well,
it is brutal. I mean, CNBC, I know, is the other way, but it can't be as bad.
Right.
I mean, I don't think they want to take every Republican and shoot them.
Actually, they do.
Well, I don't know. I don't.
That's what I'm seeing all over social media, on both sides. So you know what? We don't solve problems by saying we ought to take everybody out and shoot them. Okay, but here's what we do know. All right, we just went through 5 years of stupidity with a virus, right? On both sides. All right, and oh, by the way, we also went through 5 years of knowing false statements made by people who knew better, including Deborah Birx, who has now admitted to it.
We got a dash here, Carl, but we also, no hint of any pullback here on the people who got the lion's share of the PPP money. No hint.
Oh, well, now hold, maybe not the lion's share, but I'll tell you what, someone that I knew down in Florida he took it, he got audited, he'd scammed it. They clawed it all back and destroyed his business. As far as I'm concerned, he deserved it.
I know an attorney who's represented some people. They're not. He's not representing the people that got the five mil. He's representing people who made the application wrongly and then thought better of it and never got a dime.
Oh no! This is a guy who actually took the money.
These people never got a dime. Never got a dime. And they're after him because they filed a false application, but then they never took the money.
Well, that's
Do you think
a,
that's okay. a waste of time?
Yeah, that's a different situation. Okay, but I'm talking about people who actually did take the money and scammed it.
Every garbage company, they still picked up the garbage and got paid, didn't they?
Well, okay, but like I said, I know somebody that pulled some BS, got the cash, got audited, okay?
Well, getting the cash, I wouldn't go after anybody for getting the cash because it was a loan because we got one.
Well, except it wasn't. It was supposedly forgiven.
It was a loan. Then you had to make an application that you used it properly forgiveness. That's where the fraud was. If you actually paid the damn thing back, what's the difference?
Well, but he didn't pay it back.
No, I'm saying not the fraud. Not saying you used it properly when you didn't, that's where the fraud was.
Well, I understand that. And I'm saying he got busted and his business is destroyed.
Okay, all right, we got to dash here to Joel. We'll pick this up on Friday. Sorry, Friday's not too far away, bud.
No, it's not. You know, enjoy that nice weather you're getting up there.
Yeah, we got another 2-3 days, but we're gonna outweigh them. It's the middle of February. They can't come after us too much more after this.
You got about another 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, another 3 days of this. It'll be 35 this weekend. That'll be fine.
Well, all right, it'll start to melt.
All right, bud. Okay. You want to go? We have Joel.
He's not in the meeting. Oh, yeah. There we go.
There he is.
He popped up like on TV.
Yeah, something like that.
Joel, how are you, bud?
Good morning, Chief. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Did you watch 50 Years of Saturday Night?
No, what? I did not. How was it?
You know, it was kind of one part was good. Some parts it was not so good. Other parts it was very nostalgic. But then they had a couple of parts in there where, you know, like some of the music and stuff. Like, who the hell are these guys? But that's just me. But, obviously, I remember when it first came on. You know, it was those people were – one part was it still went back. They replayed all this stuff like you could never do on TV anymore. But the best part is Bill Murray comes out, and he was going to grade all the guys on the news, you know, to do the news update. So then he has – best African-American news update people.
Okay.
And of course, there's only been one. Michael Che. So he says, okay, you're number one. Then he goes, well, now for the regular people. And Michael Che goes, what do you mean regular people? I don't think he knew that was part of the thing. It was hilarious. So then Colin Jost is sitting right next to him. And he goes from the worst to the best, right? And he thought, since his name wasn't on there, that he was going to get to that he was going to be number one. He wasn't even number one. He's like, I don't know who the hell they put. He put in a number one slot. Somebody didn't even. But he had was it Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin, Jane, you ignorant slut. They were like number three. There was a lot of people in there. But you know who had the best that brought a tear to your eye was Lorraine Newman was out in the studio and said, just turn the lights back on. I just want to feel it one more time or something. It was pretty mm-hmm. sad. She looks good. Garrett Morris, he's up there. I mean, he must have been older than the rest of those guys, but he's still, he's alive. But you know, the last two songs, Paul McCartney was there. He could still sing.
Oh, really?
Them. Yeah.
He's up there.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll tell you. Saturday Night's been around a long time, and I definitely like comedy, and I definitely like music. It's just something that I never... I really got hooked on,
I did early, and then when those guys all left, I think if it was an hour and a half show, where they could 2 hours a lot for comedy, every week. But
yeah,
I watched the Weekend Update; those guys are fun. But you know what it shows the difference in one thing that was interesting. I think you would have liked is they did maybe a 10-minute spiel, maybe not that much, 3-5 minute spiel on the differences in New York through the decades. Which was incredible. They talked about in the 70s how, the place was basically a bleep hole, nothing but hookers. Mm-hmm. I mean, Times Square was, nothing but a bunch of porn shops, right? And then they went to the 80s. They talked about everybody's making nothing but money and how much cocaine. And they had all these things about these stockbroker guys snorting cocaine and drinking vodka at all these restaurants. It was pretty spot on. Then they went to the 90s and the 2000s. That part was interesting. And somebody did some research there. But, it is. People had a much thicker skin back then. I mean, everything wasn't. Some of the skits really, really, really were improper today. And yet, so what? Everybody went through it, right? We all survived. You couldn't call somebody an ignorant slut on TV now. I don't think.
There's a lot of things. Yeah, then getting home, I was out on Saturday nights, and then. I guess for a while, I guess it's been a while since you could DVR it and stuff and catch things. But no, I just try and catch, if I see there's something good or a good skin on it. Maybe on a replay or something. If I'm bored, I'll check it out. But, they had their heyday, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they had some fantastic people. A lot of them from Second City there in Chicago, right? And, Gilda Radner, of course, from the Detroit area, rest in peace, and John Belushi and Chris Farley, and I mean, you can go and name a lot of the great people here. Now, I'd be hard pressed to name one person on there, but I'm just not a huge TV guy.
The two guys that do the weekend updates are real good. Colin Jost and Michael Che, they're good.
Yeah. But all right, what's going on with the market?
Yeah, let's talk about some market here.
Are they too bored for you, Chief?
There's all kinds of stuff going on here in the gold. But did you see the turnaround in gold on Friday?
I was out on Friday. What happened?
It was up like $20. Finished down 45 or something.
That's gold. Yeah. Okay, that's what it does. And it's had a nice move. Moving counter to Bitcoin a little bit. I guess a safety trade. What perplexes me is just silver. Just the ugly redheaded stepsister. I mean, that is just not made the same kind of move, but played a little catch up today. Interesting week ahead, Chief. Really no big catalyst as far as earnings or economic data. You do have an options expiration coming on Friday. Volatility has really come down in the market. We had like a 25-point intraday range on Friday, a little over that during the regular session. So slow and steady, bodes well here for the bull market. I mean, I don't know what you're looking at as far as all-time highs. The S&P cash is up there now. I always like to keep an eye on the front much futures, but, right now, hard to find anything wrong with this market.
Well, except that it's kind of high.
It's kind of high, but, we can't talk valuations or
fundamentals or things like that.
We get blown out of the water.
What do you make of, key question, what do you make of the interest rates? Is the Fed doing some crap here? Because we had, you could code it any way you want it, a horrendous CPI number and an almost equally as bad PPI number, and the interest rates are down over the two-day period. Where do you think that, where's that coming from?
maybe they see a slowdown that we don't see. I don't know where there was a temporary blip in the number. I mean, a lot of things are pointing to higher unemployment, higher inflation, less government spending. I mean, a lot of things are pointing negative, except for the compass on the market, Chief, and maybe the Fed's thinking they're gonna have to, maybe that number wasn't as bad as we took it, and they'll be easy sooner than later. But I think we're slowing wherever we're at now. I think that's where rates are gonna hold for a while. Maybe the whole year. Maybe the Fed won't do anything the whole year.
We're talking two different things. You're talking short term. I'm talking 10-year. Right? If this inflation doesn't come back, I can see an 8% 10-year rate like real soon. If we're talking of, the number on Wednesday was a 6% inflation number, 0.5%, right? So what's 0.5% times 12? Duh. I mean, this is not that difficult.
Simple math.
My concern with the market, Joel, and by the way, my people have had, when I talk like I'm Doggy Downer here, but I know, was it Debbie Downer? That was a lady in a, but I'm not. I mean, my people are having, we're having a great year, so it's, I mean, I'm not, if it wants to keep going, knock itself out. But what you just mentioned, talking about the employment picture, maybe not so much. Federal government, they're probably going to still continue to send checks to supporters. They're going to lay other people off, but will the real number come down? I don't know. We'll see. I hope so. My concern is the only stool I see left standing is the market. When we're talking about inflation, matter of fact, the stagflation term was coined by some bank guy last week, wasn't it? You're not supposed to say that on TV. That's like yelling shank at a driving range, right? If you bring out the stagflation number in an economics discussion, nobody wants to see that again. But if the market were to correct 30%, it's the only shining light we have left, isn't it?
30%, Chief.
Well, I'm just 20.
What about 3%? Okay, what would it take to I think there's a lot of negative catalyst here, and it just doesn't go down. So in the app, you just can't fight the tape at this point. I mean, 30%, 10%, 3%. I don't know, Chief. I was out the last three days, so I'm a little foggy. I'm not as up on the market as not. I just watch this thing grind higher. And rates, wars, whatever. It just seems that there's just a massive bid underneath these markets.
I don't disagree. I think it's coming from. And by the way, we haven't sold hardly any calls on people. That's what we normally do for people. Because the thing keeps rolling up. We don't want to fight the calls. We're just letting it go up. Yep. So I'm all for it. I'm just saying I wonder why when somebody says, maybe it's because I went through this once, it can only go down another 10% and then I watch it go down 25 in one day. It's hard for somebody to put, I mean, why we have the S&Ps right now, the spiders at 612, okay, which is nice. In April, they're 500. So why does somebody think we can only go down 3%? We're up 12 in 9 months. Why does somebody feel that they're smart enough to put a number on the down move, if there is one? There may not even be one, which I hope there isn't. But why does somebody think that there's somehow a line there that they can draw in their mind that everybody else is going to pay attention to? Because I wish I could have done that in 87, and it didn't work out that way.
Okay, Chief. All right, I got a hop. Pleasure as always. We'll chat again next week.
How good are you guys doing? I haven't watched your team.
We're on a roll. 1-6 in a row. We beat Purdue. We're ranked 12th. We got big game against State. We got 2 games against State of our remaining 6. So a lot could happen. We could go anywhere from a 2 or 3 seed and then, you know, all the way down to a 7 or 8. We've won 6 close games in a row. Wow. So yeah, they're good, man. Well, we'll see what happens, but we'll definitely be dancing in March, and that's the important.
Well, good for you. Now, the Irish, you got to watch the girls. The guys are useless.
Number one, I heard. Yep.
They're good, and the guys are horrible. They're absolutely horrible. Okay. We got nobody. All right, take care, bud. Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
We do.
Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. Explain to me how 2 lousy numbers and the interest rates are down and the CPI.
You know what? It's so funny because if you notice, and I put this in my note this morning, they're screaming about retail sales and they're talking about furniture and vehicles, which are down the most. Okay, so let's just go back for 1 second. In the last quarter of 2024, furniture grew by 5.6%. Vehicle sales were up 7%. Now we've gone through the holidays when people, you know, either buy a new car or give a car as a gift, or maybe they refurnish, they kind of give a facelift to their house ahead of the holidays. Now it's January. So people are, you know, taking a breath. They're looking at the bills that they created because it was another record spending year for the holiday season. And so they just pull back. And since you don't buy furniture every day and you don't buy a car every day, you know, those two categories were down. Well, guess what? Why is anybody surprised? Yet restaurants were higher. General merchandise was higher. Gasoline spending was higher. All the stuff that you and I need on a daily basis. Not the furniture that we don't need on a daily basis to buy, nor a car. So I think the whole thing, the narrative that they chose, is to focus on, oh my God, retail sales, we need to cut rates right away. I think it's baloney.
Well, I think they, somehow or another, there's still, when you say that, Kenny, I was talking to Joel about the Saturday Night Live in the 50 years, and I just kind of watching the time go through there as I watched the show. Yeah. I could remember where a guy could buy his daughter a car that was halfway decent for like $3,000. Now, only you can plunk your daughter down 60 G for a car when she's 18. That's a real number.
Well, of course it's a real number, but I'm not even sure that people are doing that. Look, when my daughter turned, when they got their ability, I bought them a used car. I didn't go out and buy them new cars. Oh, they're going to get banged up. And so why would I spend money on a new car? First of all, I wouldn't buy them a new car. It's just not my style, right? But to your point, even used cars today, you can't go out and buy a $3,000.
Oh, God, no. If you're not ponying up 10 or 15, you're not getting anything that can run.
$20,000 you got to spend minimum.
Remember, you ever see the movie Havana, Robert Redford?
No.
Or see the part in The Godfather when they were down in Cuba? And how whatever the time was, but they're all driving these like 1954 Buicks and stuff with whole new engines and whole new everything's in them, but they're still running, right? Somehow or another, they kept the things running, but you know, none of the parts were from the U.S. I don't know where the hell they got them, but somehow or another, the frames were still moving. That's what's going to happen in this country, because nobody, the amount of people that need a vehicle now is nowhere near matching the amount of people that can afford a new one. Kenny, you and I should have 3 or 4 auto repair places we wouldn't have to do anything else. It'd be better to manage money, for God's sake.
100%. It's scary, right?
You can't. It's only going to get worse. You're going to see people driving around with pickups that are from the 1980s, for God's sake.
Okay, so it's funny you say that, because I have a 2019 Xfinity that's got 90,000 miles on it, and I thought to myself, you know what? Summer's coming and all that stuff. I want to get the hoses, the radiator hoses. I want to get it flushed and change the hoses, right? Just so I get new hoses, because the car's, you know, 5 years old and it's got a lot of miles on it, blah, blah. So I went to go have that done at the local Firestone auto shop place, right, versus bringing it to the Xfinity. They want $700 to flush the radiator and put two new hoses on the radiator. $700. I looked at it, I go, wait. What? How much? $700.
I think for that amount, you should get a new radiator.
It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
When the guy said it, I said, I must be losing my mind. I didn't ask for a new radiator. I don't have a problem. My radiator's not leaking. I just thought it was crazy when the guy, well, the hoses are $400. What do you mean the hoses are $400? That's what, and then it was the radiator, then it was the flushing, then it was the labor. I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
Well, Kenny, I'm gonna mention something to you. The foreign cars, well, ours don't either now, don't age well. I mean, if you start, okay, you start, you know, trying to get them to the where all those parts of this unit or this window doesn't work, or but ours are the same way. It took me and Audrey had to fix the back gate in her Cadillac. Good Lord! I mean, she ended up doing part of it herself because I was pretty handy. But she goes, they wanted like $1,500 to fix it.
Listen, I hear you, which is what I think is absolutely nuts. It's just crazy, right?
Well, that's why. I mean, my truck's in the shop. Interesting story. But so last night we take this Uber home, and it's the big old, I don't know what brand it was, but this thing is gorgeous. The guy got the XL Uber.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a Suburban. It was some other brand, but it was huge. And the amount of gadgets in the thing, computers in the back seat and everything, I'm going, what happens when this thing starts to age?
Right.
But as Carl would say, the weird part of it, Kenny, I mean, you and I are not mechanics, Carl's a little bit more into this. It's not like you can shut off, you know, some where, you know, if there's sensors for like your alignment or something, and then all of a sudden they start to go screwy, you can't just pull the plug out, because he said the thing, it's all tied into the central computer where if it doesn't work, it doesn't run.
Right. Correct.
I don't. Boy, that's crazy.
Yeah. No doubt. Yeah, it's not like it used to be when we were kids, where you could actually fix it and then move on. You know what I mean?
Well, if you had a bad alternator, you took it off, you took it to the alternator rewind spot, you gave him yours, and he gave you another one, you went back and put it on.
You remember? You just can't do it today.
So what, I said it, Joel, I don't know if you heard, but I was saying my people are having a nice year. We have not sold calls into it, only on a few times, only on a kind of a daily basis, and we actually did pretty good on that, but we're letting the thing run here. I mean, we're letting, you know, when our puts get too far out, we bring them back up a little bit. So it's actually been pretty darn easy for us. I mean, but yeah. I'm worried, Kenny, because it seems like who was the guy who used the stagflation term on the CNBC last week, and I think they gave him the hook. If anything, the market looks to me to be the only stool that's healthy.
Well, yes, I hear you. I agree. The market does feel good. It feels a little bit stretched to me, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit stretched, but that doesn't mean I think it's going to crash. I just think it needs to consolidate some more, right?
Well, if the other world is going to grow into it, but I don't know if I'm seeing that.
If the other world grows into it, right. So now you have to wait and see. Well, I guess that's going to be the next thing, right? Will the world now grow into where we are? Or does the market have to reprice to fall in line with where the world is? And that's going to be the question, right? Is the economy, in fact, weakening, or is it not? Right now, I'd say the data says we're fine. I don't think the economy is weakening at all. Labor markets aren't weakening, right? Wages are supposedly going higher.
How do you break it? I don't want to. I mean, Carl does this something on the, you know, on the monthly stuff. How do you, the little stuff he drags out? It's not little stuff. He just digs deeper than I would. He's always telling me I'm only on page one, and he's on page 10, which is probably true. How do you make out stuff like the changes in society? And I sense, don't take this wrong because you're you're much more modern than I am in your thinking, but when I can sense my friend Kenny, when somebody says wages are going up, Kenny says, okay, I'm going up 20 cents an hour or a dollar an hour. I work 40 hours a week. I'm up $40. That appears to not be the world we're in, Kenny.
No.
Because Carl mentioned it for like that, what did he say, the third month in a row? If, you know, well, I'll find out Friday to clarify. Because the hourly wages went up, but the weekly paycheck went down. And he said he's never seen that.
Hourly wages went up, but the weekly paycheck went down.
Yeah. People are working. Nobody, you can't multiply your hourly wage times 40 anymore.
Right.
So the same place that ups somebody 20 cents an hour or has a minimum wage increase cuts everybody 2 hours. Or an hour, or they're under 35, they're doing 32.
Yeah, right.
I mean, so it's not like our world, you know, where everybody worked 2,000 hours, was it 2,080 hours a year was the number at Pullman, right? It's 8 hours a day times the year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not what's happening. That's why people, that's why the numbers between the household survey and the other survey are so screwed up, because everybody's working two jobs.
Yeah, two jobs and have 40 hours. Some of them working, you know, 60 or 80 hours when you combine the two together, right?
Well, Nancy says the not the average, but it's becoming almost the average household. There's two and a half jobs. They're both working, and
agree with that.
One of the two of them, husband or wife's an accountant. They do taxes all spring or something. You know, they'll do something on the outside, or the guy's helping his brother remodel houses on a Saturday so he can have money for the kids' traveling team or something.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there absolutely is two and a half jobs. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. Right,
the problem is we can't go any further on that. We're at the edge.
Right, correct.
When you and I were young, most of the time was a one-income household. So yeah. You had another, essentially, well, you never had a whole person. When I say whole person, it sounds awful. You never had a whole person because the job, whoever it was that stayed home, usually, more often than not, it was the lady. But there were guys, more often than it, but when they were at home, it wasn't like they didn't do anything. Taking care of kids, the house, those are all jobs.
Agreed.
So when they go to work, you got to hire somebody else to do the other job, right?
Right.
So you didn't really gain a whole job.
No, right.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So I don't know how this is going to play out because I don't see an end to that. And I think also, listen, I think the gig economy also allows people to have that quote unquote half a job or extra job because it's a gig economy. They can work remotely. They can use technology. They use AI to help them and all that stuff. So I think that plays into it, which allows people to have that more than one job, right? Which I think was part of the problem, actually. Not part of the problem. I think it's the issue when you talk about all these federal workers that have been sitting home since COVID because, you know, they get to work from home. I think they're working two jobs. I think they're working from home and federal, and I think they're doing this gig economy stuff, which is why 70,000 of them said, you know what, screw it. I'll raise my hand and take it out. They're going to take the payout because they've already got this other job going on. I don't think these people are going to fall into the unemployment line at all.
Let's expand on that a little bit. Two things, Kenny. I've said there were some surveys here in Chicago, and by the way, you're spot on as usual. One of the biggest reasons people don't want to come back to work is they had a little side hustle. They're walking the neighbor's dog. They're doing something.
Yeah.
But the other one is, and what the companies don't quite get, and I'm sure, you know, whatever, the people we have in charge in Washington don't get, and Jamie Dimon and those guys, because I think he's kind of left the rest of us, The difference in cost of going to work, and all of a sudden you were able to sell the junk car, now you have to go out and buy a new one. The cost of coming back to work, going out and getting the clothes, of course nobody dresses up anymore even now, but I'd say you almost need a 20% raise to come back to work.
Right.
To make you even. And I don't think the people up top have any clue that that's the case. I mean, the parking taxes up in Chicago, the tolls to get the Indiana and the Skyway have, like, doubled in the last 4 years. I mean, we're not talking about apples and oranges. Like, you know, get out of bed and get on a train.
Nope.
So, I mean, there's expenses there. Plus, what do you suppose the cost of daycare is versus 5 years ago?
It's skyrocketed the cost of daycare.
So right? It's not as simple as get your ass off the sofa and get to work.
No. And if you go to New York City, now you get hit with a congestion tax.
Yeah, that's wild, huh?
Drive your car into the city, which is because it's like $9 or something. Yeah, it's like on top of what it costs you to go across the bridges, which I think are $12 now just to go across the bridge, right? Whether
yeah, that's crazy.
Get into the city. It might actually be more than that. It might be $15 to go across the bridge.
Well, Audrey, some people, she sold a house a while ago. You know, I learned a lot through Aud and Nancy because, you know, they deal with people that, well, we don't necessarily want to manage money side. And there's one guy decides he's moving to Indiana because it's cheaper, right? But he's still going to work. So he sells his place in Palos Royal or someplace. Audrey, of course, does a nice job for him, as she always does. And the dude moves to Indiana. Now, she wasn't part of that because she's not, I don't think she's registered in Indiana. I don't know, maybe she is. But so the guy buys a place over there and he's commuting downtown. Well, instead of hopping the train in Palos or someplace, he's now driving in. He goes, but now the Skyway, which is like 3 miles long, the city sold it in one of our incredibly stupid moves, is now, I think it's $780 each way. And parking downtown, with the new taxes and everything, so he's 15, 16 bucks on tolls. Then there's another $2 each way on that little piece of the Indiana toll road. So he's essentially $20 a day in tolls and like $25 to park. So he goes, I'm down dough. Even though, you know, I thought I was making this move and I got a house a little cheaper. I'm down dough. It's what do you say? It's well, 20 days a month times what, $25 a day is $500 a month just in tolls and in parking.
Yeah.
I haven't gained anything.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. It's crazy, right?
Yeah, man, and all these people, all these cities and states are looking for ways to get you again. What are you supposed to total?
The worst. It's only going to get worse, especially for the big blue states that spend money like there's no tomorrow. Where they're looking for everything to grab. It's unbelievable.
Well, I don't. You know what's funny though, Kenny, is how people, especially, well, maybe everybody. So it seems like it's more the conservative people kind of believe all this crap that people are telling you. It's almost like the big lie. I mean, I've done some work. You know, you were on a couple times. We went through, it was a couple years ago, Kenny. We went through, I don't know where I found this thing. Of course, I can't find it again. I'm such a dummy when it comes to the internet. It was somebody went state by state and looked at like all the taxes, not just the ones that people tell you about. And it was pretty stunning. The states that we think are all the, you know, the blue knave states, they weren't the highest. The highest was Wyoming if you died there, because their death tax, if you happen to croak there, was like made up for all the rest of the stuff.
Right.
There's not that much difference in some of the. There are some. I mean, California, obviously, but for a long time, people forget the part that if you were in California, your kids didn't pay college tuition. No, I think you do, right? Well, that's a big difference. When you look at all the stuff, they all pretty much get you. The ones that sort of don't are some like New Mexico or places, and they have an amazing amount of government spending there, you know, with the air bases and all the other stuff, and how many people in the state are on government retirement. But when you start piecing all that together, there's no free home in any of these states, red or blue.
I agree with you. I don't think there's a free... No, I don't. Just depends on, you know, you got to find a place that makes sense for you.
Yeah.
That's
but in Wisconsin, everybody says, oh, you got to go to Wisconsin. Illinois is so screwed up. I think taxes in Wisconsin are higher than Illinois. But everybody's convinced that's because it's pretty much a red state most of the time, that it's much cheaper. No, it's not.
Well, it may not be cheaper, but maybe Wisconsin manages their finances better than Illinois.
Maybe.
Right. Or New York or California, any of the big states, right, that mismanage their funds.
Well, California, the idea that you know, here, when people talk about, you know, what are your taxes in France, and they'll say, well, gee, they're 50, 60, 70% house, or say it's 50 or 60, and how can anybody live there? It's a socialist thing, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I don't think they have, I'm no expert on France taxes, but I don't think they have property taxes. They don't have states in France, do they?
I think they're regions, right?
Yeah, so, but it's not like here where, I mean, what do you suppose somebody in California, if you put it all together, what are they paying out of their paycheck? It's got to be, if you, God bless, I mean, between the federal, state, property taxes.
Paying close to 60%.
It's got to be at least that.
I think New York is the same thing. I think you're 55% in New York.
You know, Indiana, if you own a car, they charge you a percentage of the car's value every year for your ticket instead of everybody pays the same amount. That's weird. Hey, but you know, it's funny. This is the part that, you know, you and I don't usually talk politics, which is great. I'm just waiting for somebody to come out. And we've got, you know, our co-president. Explain to me. I know you're a conservative guy. Explain to me how to this day nobody has figured out a way to charge a Tesla owner his highway tax. It's not that difficult, is it? Why should they get it for free?
Well, they shouldn't get it for free. But how do you charge them a highway tax?
Easy.
Right? Charge them.
Well, but what is the average person? The calculation is not that difficult. I mean, I'm going to say if you get 20 miles a gallon in your nice vehicle and you drive 20,000 miles a year,
right?
Well, that's 1,000 gallons, right?
Right.
The federal tax is roughly 20%.
Oh, all right.
That's
so you're talking
$200.
Like you and I pay gas tax every time
yeah.
we fill up.
It's $200. Give me the check. Right. Why should it be free?
Well, it should be free. I agree.
But you think that Elon, our co-president, is going to come out tomorrow and that's going to be number one on his list?
No, of course not.
Right.
No. Well, maybe it will be. I don't necessarily think that he's that immune to it. I think he recognizes that there are issues that have to be fixed. Although, would that be off of his list? Maybe not. But I think if you talk about it and you're logical about it, I think there's no reason to think, well, wait a minute. If I'm paying a gas tax every time I go fill up, and you're driving an electric car, you should also pay some kind of a tax to use the roads.
Plus, they're heavier. They're heavier.
Right.
So they should pay more.
Correct. It actually puts more wear and tear on the roads and the bridges.
I mean, one of the companies that I think a lot of people, we have people that own it and love the company, Amazon. To me, the company's been a scam since day one. Not now, but when everybody didn't have to pay taxes there and it buried all your bricks and mortar places. How can our politicians be stupid enough to let that happen? The place that's paying you property taxes.
Up to that, right?
I mean, how allowed other people to not pay property or sales taxes? I mean, how is it because the governor's wife was buying TVs from Amazon or what?
I don't know.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff wrong when you look around, right?
Yeah, there's a ton of things that are wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, all the people over 150 years old that are still getting Social Security checks, apparently, from the U.S. government.
I find that it's probably there. I was just mentioning to Carl, and we collectively, you know, even me, and I mean, by being in the middle politically, I look much more askance at anything anybody says on both sides. We have people that I think are pretty darn smart, allowing certain people to define the problem for us. Is it being this massive problem? Which, of course, it is a problem. I mean, I'm not denying that, and I'm all for audits, which we should have been doing like forever.
Right.
But they're going to define the problem. They're going to tell us how horrible it is, and they're going to tell us they fixed it, and the dirty Democrats just let it go. Well, you know what? I'm not into any game. I wouldn't trust you and you. I would personally in the market with my money if you got to tell me where IBM closed the night before and not the market.
Yeah, but here's the question. I hear you on that, but why are the Democrats standing up and now screaming and yelling about finding this waste? What is it that
it's
you
not? It's not the waste. I'll let you know where I am, and you tell me that I'm all messed up. That's fine. I went through a bunch of this weekend. I went through a bunch of waste estimates back from Bush's time.
Yeah,
and it was the General Accounting Office who ever estimated $95 billion of fraud and government programs, Medicare, you name it, back in his time. Which, by the way, got to like 100 and something in his last year.
Right.
The guy had other stuff to worry about. We had, you know, it was roughly 3% of federal spending.
Right.
You and I think, would love it at 2 or 1.5 or 1. We know it's never going to be 0. I mean, because you're dealing with people, right? So at what point do you have to put... Right now, if you look at the numbers, they've been percolating along almost every year roughly at the 3% number. Except COVID goosed it. Now, the federal employees didn't get that money. Other people did.
Right, other people. Yeah,
I'm saying right now we're right about at that 3, 3.5% fraud number. Now, do you and I want it less? Yeah, but now all these people in Washington that they're basically tossing out, what I don't like, Kenny, is these guys. They must be Democrats. They didn't vote for me. They don't do anything all day long. Just get them the hell out of here. I don't buy that at all. The amount of stories I was reading this weekend, some of the guys that took the buyout plan got laid off. How do you say yes to the buyout plan and get laid off on Thursday? I mean, they're going so fast, and the idea that, you know, 30% of the people mustn't be doing anything. I mean, you know, Trump's family, their deal was to throw old ladies out of rent-controlled buildings. Now, you and I can make the economic argument that there shouldn't have been any rent-controlled buildings. I get it. And I probably would be on the side of, why the hell would you do something like that? But once you did, the people who took advantage of it and threw people out, they've never been on the other side of this. And I think there's a problem with that. It's not what you do, Kenny. Sometimes it's how you do it. I mean, the idea, could they have some sort of a four-year plan to not hire new people and let people matriculate out like Clinton did? I think Clinton had less. Did he? One or two of the years he was in, there were less federal employees than the year before, right? And he managed to do it without, you know, the bombastic on a Thursday, don't show up for work on Friday crap. That you don't need to do that. This is all for somebody's entertainment and for something. These people are all bad people. They're all Democrats, or they wouldn't be here. They didn't vote for me. Screw them. We're getting them all out of there. They don't have a job anymore. I mean, come on. Would you and I like to get to the right the same place? Probably. But they don't get the money. When are one of these two guys going to come out and say, we found 50 checks going to red state Republican donors that got too much money in the agriculture program. We're clawing the money back. I don't think these guys are capable of that. They're going to fire the people in the agricultural department. But, I mean, let's go after where it is. The PPP money wasn't in the people who to send out the check. It was the people who stole the dough, Kenny. I mean, let's go after them.
I'm not disagreeing with you. There were plenty of people that stole the dough, 100%. But how did they steal the dough? They stole the dough because either people weren't paying attention or they were just handing it out at the time. Remember, at the time, they were just handing out the money, just giving it out. And so, well, at the time, you could say, okay, I understand it. But if you go back and you really look at who got that money, did we really need to give all that money to Harvard University or to any one of the big universities? Did we really need to do that? No, I don't think we did.
Okay, but the law came out. And correct. This was under the Trump administration, by the way.
Correct.
The law came out. Kenny, I mean, you and I know, we talked about it on the show. This was helicopter money.
Yes, it was helicopter money.
They just were going to give it out there so people could spend it. But the fraud came in. They said, anybody, PTI Securities, okay, we'll give you guys a loan to stay in business. We took a very small one because, you know, my brother saw us, well, so am I, but the day is long. And yep. So now you got the loan. There was people forget this. There was an interest component to that.
Correct.
We had to pay that back. Okay. Yeah. But then, if you use the money in a way that was prescribed, just for salaries, and the weird part of it was, we could have asked for. I don't know if you know this, but we could have probably asked for, when, according to the original terms of it, we asked for what we could ask for. But the terms kept changing. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah.
So we could actually have probably asked for almost double what we did. And as time went by, the government, which were Trump's people at the time, realized that an awful lot of people were cheating. And then when it came time to fill out the form saying you did things perfectly and the loan should be forgiven, okay, and never had to pay the interest, We were not, my brother and I are never going to put our name on a piece of paper where there's one shred of dishonesty on there. That's just not the way we're built.
Right.
But as time went by, I think rent was not supposed to be included. All of a sudden it was included. And something else was included. So if we would have anticipated that and said, let's get like twice as much as we should go and then let the chips fall where they may, we actually could have gotten double forgiven without any fraud, even though when we took the dough, it looked like it was double. So there was a creep to everybody forgets all this stuff, and all we're going to do in about how much that how the people in office at the time, which was a combination of Trump and then Biden, nothing changed. They realized that so many people had cheated that they better find a way to make them non-cheaters. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, yeah.
And so all of a sudden, the guys who were honest, essentially like us, ended up with half maybe what other people got. But this has been going on forever. Now the whole idea is, you know, the guys in the consumer fraud department, they're screwed up. I don't know if you listened to Powell last week, where the one wacky senator lady started asking him questions about, okay, this is if you have a complaint with your bank or so forth, you send it to this consumer fraud department. And when that thing was, you were on the show, I think, Kenny, when they were made, or that group, the child of Elizabeth Warren, I think, I was all against it, saying, wait a minute, this is nothing but duplication of expert. You know, this is what the Fed should be doing, the comptroller of the currency and stuff. Well, the lady asked Powell directly, this group goes out of business, where does that complaint go? Does it now go to you? Because they regulate the banks, right? He said, oh no, there's no duplication of effort. We don't take care of any of that stuff. Okay, so it's one thing to say, get rid of these people, and maybe you and I might agree with that, but they do something. And now the idea is, the something they do, who's going to pick up on it? And the answer is nobody. Well, that's a problem.
Yeah, no, that's a big problem. Agreed. I just don't know how, you know, you have to start some way to try to fix it, I guess. And whether or not, you know, you think it's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, I do support. You got to shine a light on it. You got to see where it's going and how it's going, and then just fix it. Because, you know, money going out the door to some of these places where they say it's going, I have to believe, makes no sense to you as much as it makes
without
no
a doubt. But we also, I actually dug up the name of it. I don't think I sent it to you. I saved you. There's some act. Well, you remember this. I don't. Hal's probably on. He probably remembers it. There was an act where they allowed interstate banking somewhere in the night. Was it a Clinton thing, I think? Because who was Clinton's VP? Was it Benson? Lloyd Benson?
No, but Clinton's VP was Al Gore.
That's right. Who was Lloyd Benson's guy? Was that Obama?
Yeah, but Lloyd Benson never became vice president.
Oh, that's right. What
he
anyway,
was
he was secretary of something. What was he? Anyway, there was a law that came out that said, okay, everybody gets to do branch banking in other states. You could go across state line with a bank, whatever year that was, somewhere in the 90s, I think. And they said, okay, so now Wells Fargo, who could never be in Illinois, right, now all of a sudden can be in Illinois. They could put a branch open in Illinois. And the caveat there was no bank gets to have more than 10% of the deposits countrywide or 30% in every bank, in every state. That's not being enforced. The Citibank's like 16%. Bank of America is like 15%. Okay, so, right. So before you dump the consumer group, which maybe shouldn't be there in the first place, why don't you look and say, well, wait a minute, maybe if these guys were under 10%, we wouldn't need a consumer group because there would be some more competition, but there isn't any.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't just do one thing, right, Kenny? I mean,
I agree with you. I'm not suggesting you can just do one thing, but you have to start somewhere to try to figure it all out, right?
Well, right, but it never seems to be going after the people that have all the dough. It's going after the people that are the lower end. Let's kick these guys around a bit. They're easy to kick.
Well, because the other guys can hire lawyers.
Yeah. It's just like
when the IRS comes and knocks on your door. You and I can't afford necessarily to hire a lawyer to fight it, so you get in. But the big guys hire lawyers, and they just keep putting it off.
Well, is that our destiny, Luke? That we're going to have... Looks like
I don't know,
it.
But I got to jump because I got to jump on another call in 5 minutes.
All right, buddy, you take care of yourself. You sound great. S&P futures up 22, NASDAQ futures up 22. We have Professor Hal.
Yes, we do.
Well, sorry we ran a little over there, but I'm sure you're listening and probably got all kinds of nasty things to say to me.
Well, I wouldn't say nasty things. I would just say disagreements.
Well, I know where everybody is coming from on all this stuff, and the weird part is I've never. The last few weeks of the show, I've never had more argument type stuff with people that I agree with than I ever have. I don't like the tone. I don't like what we're doing first. What we're doing is, in a lot of places, I think okay. How we're doing it, why we're doing it, and not fixing other stuff around it that's obvious because it affects people we like versus people we don't like. I've never seen a more horrendous batch of crap than I'm seeing right now, ever.
Well,
it has nothing to do with the theory of it. I agree with you guys on the theory of it.
I was watching Joe Rogan's podcast with Mark Andreessen, former board member of Facebook, and it was pretty. It is pretty interesting what the previous administration was doing. They didn't get any press whatsoever, or very little press. So, I think it's always been going on. Democrats have always gone after their political opponents, and then it looks like Republicans are going after their political opponents. So, I mean, it's nothing new, in my opinion.
Well, I don't like the.
I mean, the IRS. I mean, wasn't the IRS going after conservative nonprofits during the Obama years? I mean, this stuff's always been going on.
Well, the conservative nonprofits. Okay, I happen to know a bit about that because some one of my clients is involved. When you talk about what are these things, the 401(c)s, they're a lot of the political action committees and so forth.
Yeah.
Now, I think the way the law is written, boy, I'm a little out of my pay grade here, but in order, you can't use a nonprofit, I think, just for political purposes. So when the, well, help me with this, Hal, because the Democrats and Republicans both have their way of raising money. And I think one of them uses these 401-somethings, and the other uses political action committees. And they're kind of different animals. They're two different ways to get to the same place. Both of them are kind of shady, if you ask me. You know what? Well, why don't we? I'll just briefly open up the topic, and I'll do some research on it for next week, because it's fascinating. But the thing, the way the Republicans were going about it, is I think they're the 501(c) or D's, or again, I'll get those numbers together for next week. The thing has to be 80. They're charitable organizations, and I think that you have to have 80 or 85% of the money has to be used charitably. Whatever that means, and you get to use 15 or 20% for political stuff. But now they were using way more than that. But the thing has to be approved by the IRS. So all of a sudden, all kinds of people said, "You know what? We're going to go this way for the next election." Was the Trump election, Trump versus Hillary, and the Democrats were using their whatever crappy way of doing it, which I'll find out about next week, and we'll talk about that. It was kind of just as crooked. But the bitch was that under Obama, the IRS wasn't moving fast enough to approve these things for the conservatives. Now, how fast is fast? When I think everybody knew the thing was never going to be used 80% for charity. So, I mean, how it's like, you know, there could the IRS have been doing this faster? Maybe. You know, were they intentionally keeping it slow because they knew that the group using those things was Republicans, or were they intentionally doing a show because they knew that none of the money was going to charity when it was supposed to? So I mean,
if you look at a lot of charities, I mean, do the donations go to administrative salaries? And
well, I know, but my point is they were.
I think very little of the money.
But it was
goes.
The approval process. All right, and which was slow, when they knew half the places were non-compliant, and if you have to hustle it in before the election, you're not hustling it in so you give out 20% to Hal Snar's softball team for little kids. I mean, what are you doing it for? So the question is, how fast should the IRS under a Democratic administration? Should they have to work overtime on weekends to all of a sudden approve all this stuff for the Republicans on a Friday night? How fast is fast? Well, in the minds of some people, if you're a conservative, it should be like yesterday. Okay, how fast is fast?
We could do an audit. We could check the average length of approval for a progressive Democrat organization.
Well, the thing
of it
is, they came at it a different way. They didn't need the same kind of approval in the scam that they had. I'll find out what the scam was the other way. It's just as bad on the Democratic side. But I'm saying,
honestly, I don't think there should be any nonprofits. I mean, everybody got expenses. Everybody's got revenues, whatever. However, they generate those revenues, whether they're donations or tuition or whatnot. Honestly, everybody's got expenses and revenues, and the difference in that is profit. Call it profit, call it income. And I don't think anybody should get any tax advantages.
What would happen if I wandered into Hal's high-end class and I put up on a... Okay, I'm going to show myself here. I'm going to put on the blackboard. But you still have a blackboard, yeah?
I haven't seen blackboards in classrooms since I took Ron Middlehammer's class in econometrics. And when you're in that class, he was so jacked up on caffeine that when the chalk hit the board, the dust flew in our faces. It was really impressive.
Wait, but you know, if I went up there and say, "Okay, class, define profit in today's world," you and I know what it is, but it's wobbled some, right?
Yeah, it's evil if it's called profit, and it's not evil if it's called income. I don't know why, but
well, it's in the profit. In my mind, is stuff that is the residual that goes to owners. That would be profit.
Yeah.
Now that's not a definition. You could never convince me that Northwestern University, that allegedly doesn't pay, they don't even pay a water bill, for God's sake, their hospital.
They don't even, you
can't tell me
they close down competition too.
Right?
Anybody that opens up a competing business across the street can be closed down by them.
Without a doubt. And then
that's the governor.
And the guys who run the place, if you get a, you know, I'm going to have to find out how much they actually make one of these days, but, you know, if they're making.
Can you imagine Walmart being able to do what Northwestern does? I mean, and the outrage that would generate?
If somebody is. I mean, I actually came to this, grade me here, Professor. I came to the conclusion that, let's say, for instance, not even talk about Northwestern, let's talk about my favorite whipping boy, Commonwealth Edison. Now, those guys, they have to pay profit. They have shareholders, correct? So they're a for-profit organization. But if because they are protected, okay, by being a monopoly, the power doesn't lie with the shareholders. Now, you would think that part of the idea of having shareholders or having owners is the owners are ultimately in charge. Well, that ship has sailed, correct? I mean, as Eric told us one day, it's his management class. Who the hell are they?
Yeah.
They're not the owners. It's not their dough. They're not really the employees. Well, I guess they sort of are, but they're in charge. They're running the company and the country. And who the hell are they? The head of the medical group is not a guy who invented penicillin. It's some guy that got hired and thinks he owns the place, right? And so, I mean, I would say, if I was in your class, I would say anybody who works at Commonwealth Edison, if the, quote, market value of your job, say the VP of finance, say, okay, in a company that big, the VP in finance makes $800,000. I have no idea. Let's say $800,000. Somehow their guy's making $1.6 million. I'm going to say there's $800,000 of quote profit, which is it's just not going to the shareholders, right? It's money going to some place, to someone over market price, correct? It's I don't know if you want to call it profit, but there needs to be a name for it, don't you think?
Yeah.
Somebody at a nonprofit who makes the guys who were doing all the you know, the border control stuff, the guys are making $1 million. Well, okay, I'm going to say they have an outfit that has 3,000 people working for them. There's not a whole lot of people, or 2,000 people. There's not a whole lot of people in 2,000 size industries that are making $2 million as a CEO, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the problem with these monopolies is
they're not
disciplined by the market, nor are, you know, government bureaucrats. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but I saw a report of the person who's in charge of the water being in the hydrants in L.A. And apparently her salary is $750,000 a year. And when the water needed to be in the hydrants, it wasn't, right? Why? Well, because these government employees are not disciplined by the market, nor are these government-protected monopolies. And this podcast with Joe Rogan and Mark Andreessen was really eye-opening because it confirmed what I knew all along is government issues pages and pages of regulations to set up a cartel of the favored companies, and that prevents the disruption that dislodges those incumbents in a given industry. And he was talking about banking and AI and social media companies, and he knows a lot about all three of them because a lot of his enterprises have been debanked. And he is in the AI space, And he was a board member, I think, of Facebook. So this guy's pretty interesting. And if you look at the number of new banks, and this is where I learned it from. If you look at the number of new banks, there's virtually no new banks since the Consumer Protection Act, Dodd-Frank, and TARP were rolled out.
Right.
Virtually no new banks, right? And then the Consumer Protection Agency, Consumer Financial Protection Agency, is intended to, you know, make it easier, I guess, for people to get loans. But it hasn't, because there's no new banks, virtually no new banks, since it was rolled out.
So now in Illinois, we got to put the time frame on this. I used to go to, my bank was First National Bank, Evergreen Park, right? There were banks all over the place on the south side. And all of a sudden, they started to get picked off one by one. And
The TARP made it easy.
No, this is long before that. Yeah. But the thing of it was, there were two banks. There was First National Beverly Park, and there was Beverly Bank. And people in Beverly use Beverly Bank and Beverly Park. But, I mean, I got a couple loans out of there for just because of they knew me for some places I remodeled construction-wise. You know, they gave me a $10,000 loan, and I paid them back in 6 months. And so the next time I walked in and said, how much you need this time? And, it was that kind of place. But I had my car loan there and stuff, and I was paying on that. So, anyway, They got bought by Old Kent, of all places. The guy who was the second leading shareholder, used to own Bleecker's Bowling Alley. So he gets his big check. The next day, he drops dead of a heart attack, which is kind of weird. So then, maybe a year later, they get bought by Fifth Third. Well, now the whole bank's down, right? But the people who worked there, a few of them went down the block and went up off this little storefront. And people who were used to using it, my mom immediately put her money in there. You could start a bank, I'm going to say 15 years ago, here in Illinois. Hell, you and I could, if we hired somebody what the hell he was doing, it wouldn't be one of us. We could start a little bank in a storefront, $1.5 million. Easy. Easy. And as you started to get the deposits, maybe you wouldn't give any loans for a while. You just invest the money with the Fed and you know, bump along until finally someday the people who used to give car loans you did, and those kinds of things. And all of a sudden, they have a place, and they're doing fine. It's called the Evergreen Community Bank. The people from Beverly Bank opened up a spot right next to the train station. So everybody coming on the train back and forth stopped in. They used them as their bank. Within 2 years, they moved a few blocks west, built a big building on the corner. Big bank building. So, I mean, it's not that... pretty recently, if you had $10 million, I could find you any one of four or five banks here in Chicago that we could buy and have a bank. It still happens here.
It happens, but if you look at the chart that I tweeted, it's virtually no new banks.
You're right, the number's way bigger than it was. But I'm saying those two banks that went under or got bought out. Within 6 months, there were two other banks right there. I mean, this has changed a lot in the last 15 years. I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying it wasn't that long ago where it was pretty easy here to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at what the Fed did in the 1980s with respect to the savings and loan industry, and it looks a lot like what they did during the financial crisis. I think the goal is to have... I think the goal of... Treasury Department, whether it's run by Democrats or Republicans, the goal is to have like three or four large mega banks that they can easily control. That's the ultimate goal. If you look at the long run...
I don't think they control them. They can easily work for when they get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, the revolving door, the regulations they have to comply with. I think
hey, that's Al, the ultimate goal. You mind if we go to break? We're going to do the first one and we come back. You're going to be the only person I've ever been able to talk about on this, because I'm kind of a fan of Volcker's. The older I get, the more I'm convinced that he put the savings loans out of business on purpose. But why don't you think about that? You could be the first person that's ever agreed with me on that. Maybe. SP Futures up 24, NASDAQ Futures up 99. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 23, NASDAQ futures up 95, so we're bouncing here today. We had an interesting week last week, and they're all interesting. We had the three-day weekend, so we have the Dow futures up 96, individual stocks, nothing, not a whole lot of earnings this morning, so nothing going too crazy. We've got NVIDIA up 247, so it's still, you know, still doing pretty good. Microsoft up 121, nothing massively bad. Salesforce up 236. Just go through the rest of the plays. Now, these guys were open yesterday here, so this is like the DAX up 30.1%, but I think they were up yesterday. FTSE up 15.1%, CAC around up 27.3%, so mostly higher over in Europe, but nothing crazy. For Asia, Nikkei up 96.2%, Hang Seng up 360, it's 1.6%. President Xi is now imploring, now Shanghai's down 31.9%. Again, it's kind of crazy stuff here. But he was imploring the Chinese entrepreneurs to like get moving now after not wanting them doing much. Now he does. It's the ever-changing world over there. As a review on Friday, Dow was down 165. S&P was down 40 cents. NASDAQ was up 81. So Friday was pretty slow. NASDAQ was the only one that was up. Bonds up 4 basis points, 4.52. Remember, these guys were down. Interest rates were down 10-year, even though the CPI and PPI sucked, which is kind of weird. Bund up 1 basis point, 2.49. Japan up 5. 1.43, so that kind of resolves with that. The Japan has gone from 0.8 to 1.5 here in the last couple of years. Doesn't seem like much, but percentage-wise, it's huge. Oil up 41 cents, 71.15, still kind of buried down in this low 70s. Brent down 8 cents, 75.14. Natural gas down 5 cents, 367. You know, it's cold as hell, which Ricky's going to tell you about. RBOB unchanged, 209. We've got gold, which was down huge on Friday. It's bouncing back pretty heavy here, up 31. 1%. It made about a $60 turn on Friday. Silver up 10 cents, 32.95. Copper down 9 cents, 4.56. We have crypto up 324, 96,264. It's been pretty steady in that area. And lastly, foreign exchange. The euro is 104.5. We've got the British pound at 125.9. So kind of steady. The dollar was, it gotten real strong and then it weakened a little bit. Now it's kind of in the middle. Reinforce Trevi Weather Sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in Chicago. Currently 0 degrees Fahrenheit with a high of 12 degrees. Frigid cold, but quite sunny this morning. Tonight will be becoming cloudy and remaining frigid with a low of 2 degrees. In Phoenix, Arizona, it's a much different story. 53 degrees right now with a high of 77. Nice with partial sunshine. And tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 51 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's 29 minutes. We're looking at 44 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lynn Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 40 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 23 minutes. And lastly, inbound Stevenson from I-294 to the Dan Ryan is 41 minutes. Let's talk about sports a little bit. No NBA games today, but tomorrow, Wednesday, February 19th, we got Hornets at Lakers at 9 p.m. This is a rescheduled game from January 9th. Then we got Thursday, February 20th, we got Bulls at Knicks at 6:30 p.m. and Suns at Spurs at 8:30 p.m. Lastly, NHL Nations face-off this week. Yesterday, we got Canada beating Finland 5-3 and Sweden beating USA 2-1. Back over to you guys.
The Irish girls won yesterday. Our guys suck, but the girls are great. Just saying.
I didn't see it, man.
I don't know. Don't you like it when your ladies are better than their ladies?
Yeah, definitely, man.
Tell you what, they got a great team and a lot of great coach. Great, it's they're fun to watch. I mean, they really are, and good for them. Hey, can I give a 30-second background because people don't know what the hell a savings loan is now. Probably there were commercial banks, there were investment banks, and there were savings and loans. Correct, back in the day, and they all had their very specific job to do. Now, when I say if you put your money in a savings and loan. It was all passbooks. Well, I guess they were all passbooks, but they were considered savings accounts. They were not. They were time deposits. They were not demand deposits. So they were not in M1, correct? Even though
it's kind of like the bank in the little teeny bank in That's a Wonderful Life, right?
Yeah. Where
when there's the bank run, and Potter's promising 50 cents on the dollar, Everybody wants to pull their money out.
Yeah.
The banker, Bailey, tells the depositors, look, you signed a contract. You're not allowed to pull your money out of this building alone, right? So there were time deposits, right?
But in reality, if you had $10,000 in your time deposit, you wanted to get $1,000, you got the $1,000.
Yeah.
And you didn't have a check.
I mean, if you're talking about a community bank like the one in Its Wonderful Life, under a normal situation where there's no bank run and there's no panic, if you walk in and you talk to George Bailey and you say, hey, George, I know my accounts, you know, are locked away for, I don't know, 60 days. I need $500 for my account to buy this thing. And George Bailey would probably approve it, right?
Yeah,
well, I think the time deposit nature was to prevent a bank run.
I would say, Al, that most people, other than that you didn't have a check, a demand deposit, you couldn't send somebody a check. Most people didn't even know it was a time deposit. Because whenever you went in and wanted your money, you got it.
Yeah.
But it was, I think it was, I should know, it was either, in theory they could hold it was, what, 30, 60, or 90? I think it was 30. Wasn't that long?
Yeah.
But it was part M2, it was not part M1. And you say, and 85% of their assets, now everybody I think on listens to the show knows this, but in a bank, the money you put in the bank, it's an asset to you, it's a liability to them, correct?
Yeah.
Now a loan, it's a liability to you, but it's an asset to them. So the assets are the loans, and the liabilities are the cash deposits of people. It's just the opposite of you.
The depositors are lending money to the bank.
Right.
The bank is lending money.
Well, they're
to
not really lending, but they're not. Really,
they are. They're lending.
Yeah, they are. Money well, to you, the bank. Yeah, you get paid for it, I suppose. So it's exactly their balance sheet's exactly the opposite of yours. So your loan is your liability. Your deposit is your asset. It's the other way around for them. Now, in a savings and loan, I think their deal was. Now you always got a little bit more. Like if the bank was paying 3.2% in a savings account, a savings loan always paid like 3.5. They were a little more. Their deal was 85% of their assets had to be in mortgages, home mortgages. I don't think they even could count as commercial ones. So then, and as long as the Fed, and I'm going to quote Professor Hale here, as long as the Fed did their friggin' job and kept the money supply growth constant, it was just a flip. You got 3% or 3.25%. Your parents went and got the loan, paid 6.25%, and the 3% VIG paid for the building, the salaries, the investigations, and the Little League jerseys, right? That was the drill for years and years and years, and it worked for everybody, I think, because 3%...
Well, it didn't work for the big banks.
No.
They didn't want competition.
What I'm saying is for the savings and loan, well, it didn't, but I think, I don't know which came first here, Hal. The savings and loans started to push. And they said, wait a minute, we like to do more than just this humdrum mortgage crap.
Oh, yeah. When a business starts to expand out of its market, the ones that are in the present market, they don't like it.
Well, then they ended up, I think, I'm not sure, Hal. If they ever had the ability to issue checking accounts, if they didn't, they were about to get it.
Yeah.
Where they all of a sudden were going to be a lot more of a competitor to a regular bank. So all of a sudden, inflation hit.
Those incumbent banks probably didn't like that at all.
No. So, but now, the individual, if you had a loan with a regular bank, when I say if you had a PTI, well, PTI doesn't borrow any money, but if we wanted to get a... This gets complicated because a brokerage firm can't borrow money, really, without the person becoming a partner. But let's say a regular business. You know, Hal's Widget Factory wants to go borrow money from a bank. Probably Hal's Widget, because Hal's a really good credit guy, you're going to be, in those days, half over prime, say. Now, you're not going to be prime. You're not going to be General Motors. But of course, they went out of business. You didn't, but another story. But you're going to be half over prime. But if 6 months from now, the Fed foolishly allows this, 6% prime where it's been for 50 years, go to like 15, all of a sudden Hal's Widgets is going to be paying 15.5, right? Which to the demise maybe of Hal's Widgets. But now if you're a savings and loan, and Hal's got the 30-year loan, maybe now the savings and loan has to start paying 12% to get enough liabilities to have cash, or they still have the loan out there. Now they got a problem because they can't raise your mortgage rate as a bank would. So when Volcker ran the rates up,
which
there,
is what happened basically when Silicon Valley Bank owned all those securities, right?
Well, their issue was the securities they had to make. That's sort of totally different because they bought all these government securities when rates were 1%. They go to, where are we now, say 4.5. Well, those securities they might have paid 100 for are now trading for 80 or 70. That's sort of different. But the savings loan just flat out, the loans were long-term and the deposits were short-term, but which was never a problem as long as the Fed kept, the amount of money in the system steady or growing steady like you always want to do.
Yeah.
So they buried that industry, and it kind of never came back.
Well, they call it deregulation, but during the deregulation of the 1970s, didn't they impose like rate controls on savings rates on the savings loans?
No.
Where the savings loans can bump up their savings rate?
No, you could raise it, but
yeah.
But I mean, the problem was,
I think they capped them, didn't they?
Well, but as long as it went over, if your dad is paying 6% on the mortgage, and your deposit in the bank, which is part of the money to finance the mortgage, are giving you 12, doesn't take long to do the math there to think you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So they ended up; those guys ended up out of business. Okay, but then, of course, everybody at the University of Chicago, all the economic thought wonks, were saying the savings and loan industry was inefficient to start with, and you're much better off having this mortgage pool with risk and all the other kind of stuff, which essentially led us to 2007, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that would never have happened under the old system.
I don't think so, yeah.
So you'll be careful what you wish for, because you got it. Now there's
whatever Volcker did, whether he did it on purpose or not, you look at the number of savings and loans at the start of the decade, around 5,000. By the end of the decade, it was, what, half that?
Is there any left now?
Yeah.
It's
about, by the end of the decade, it's more than half of it. It's down to 2,600.
But how many are there now? There's none.
Well, in 1979, there was about 5,000.
Okay.
10 years later, there's about 2,600.
Right? Okay, I would have guessed it depleted faster than that, but.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, whether he did it on purpose or not, does it really matter?
Well, I mean
I think Carl would say yeah, because he'd want, somebody in jail. But me as an economist, it doesn't really matter whether he did it on purpose or not. The result is that whatever he did really killed the savings loan industry.
Well, it goes to, God, we're used to say this in what, NCIS? It goes to motive.
Yeah.
We think, they say in the trading floor, who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket? No, we think, you and I think, and most, can I group everybody on the show that likes to disagree all the time? Which is fine. Engage, I'll use that term. What do we think his motivation was? Do we think Volcker, who, if you look at all...
Well, he's in charge of the bank cartel that the federal government set up, right?
That's where I was heading with this. You anticipated me as usual, because I thought... Was he really working for you and me, or was he working for the big banks?
He's the head of the Federal Reserve, which is the banking cartel set up by the federal government.
So, you and I, we will always agree that's a problem.
Yeah.
Even now, that's a problem. Why do they allow banks to get bigger than they're supposed to be? Why don't they say tomorrow, you guys got a year to, or if you don't break yourself up in a year, we're going to do it for you? They're not going to do that.
It's usually when somebody that proposes some kind of law to do like A, usually the law does the opposite of A.
Yeah.
And we used to call that the law of unintended consequences. I'm convinced they're not unintended consequences. They're intended consequences. But they have to sell this legislation that's going to benefit some friends, right? So they always invoke, oh, we didn't know. We try to do good. I don't buy that anymore. I think anytime a law is passed and we observe the consequences of said law, those were not unintended consequences. They were intended consequences. That's what they wanted.
I'm not...
Because we're not that bright, Tom, and they have all these smart people from Princeton and Harvard and Yale and Berkeley working for them, and they know the same stuff that we know, right?
I don't, you know, I'm not sure about that, Hal. Not just to be candid.
Well, I don't think these are unintended consequences. Honestly, I don't. I've gotten so cynical watching this.
No, you haven't. No, you haven't. You haven't. Just don't even say that about yourself.
No, I got some cynicism about 2006 and 2007, and I haven't been able to shake it since. It's a COVID flu that won't. I can't shake. I caught it, and I can't get rid of it.
I'm not so sure if it's the COVID thing. I remember.
It's a metaphor, by the way.
I know, but I remember. Why don't I remember, like, you know, what teachers said in, like, grammar school and stuff? But this is in high school, and we had a brother, and the older I get, the smarter I think he was. He was my freshman year English and history guy. Brother, I don't know what his first name was. Copper was his last name. And he started talking about laws one day, and he goes, always remember that if there's a law, it implies enforcement. If there's not going to be enforcement or uneven enforcement, it's not really a law. It's a benefit to somebody. Now, I'm looking here at the... I'm not going to ask you this one. What do you think the name of the law was that set up interstate banking and put a limit on the size of how many deposits banks can have? It's the Regal, whoever the hell he was, Regal-Neal Interstate Banking and Branching Efficiency Act of 1994.
Yeah, and I remember that because I was able to get I was in the Navy, and I wanted an account that went across state lines because I'm going to be shipped off to Bremerton, Washington, and I'm from Idaho. So I was looking for a bank that did interstate banking. So I was looking forward to the day when we'd have interstate banking. And I never understood why. I only had a year and a half of college at that point. I was in the Navy for maybe, three or four years. And I was like, why isn't there interstate banking? I don't understand this. And I celebrated. And I went out and got a first interstate checking account as soon as they were able to open up branches across state lines.
Okay, so now in here it says that a bank is not supposed to have more than 10% of all the deposits in the country.
Yeah.
Now, underneath it should have said 11%, you know, find a gazillion dollars a day, 12% take the chairman out and beat him in the street. I mean, somewhere in here, I mean, I'm not going to turn into Carl, but somewhere in there, somebody should ask the question, okay, what if somebody does? Yeah. How many blank looks are you going to have on people's faces? Are we just going to lob this one in here because we think nobody's ever going to do it? Or do we think it's really something that is important? If it is, if somebody does it, then what are we going to do? Are we going to spank him? Are we going to shoot him? What are we going to do? And the simple fact is, it doesn't appear like we're going to do anything. So
that 10% requirement is probably the reason why we have like 10 really large banks, right?
Well, no. There's two or three of them that are over the number.
Yeah.
So the question is, either don't put it in there or you know, but how many? And that's why I think one of the biggest issues.
Well, I think a lot of this stuff is just, hey, you know, it's sold as if they're going to enforce it, but there's never any intent to enforce it, right?
But I mean, it's
that's how they get support for it, right? They make the law. They don't say shall. They say should, right?
Well,
why? Because people misinterpret shall and should.
I think that somehow I think government is a reflection of, you know, people. Maybe we have too many laws.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think we probably do. I mean, you and I could we talk about shrinking some of the size of, you know, government. You probably could shrink the size of laws. But it also comes down to, and this is one I have trouble with, you know, actually some of the people on the show. It's all a question of my biggest problem, honestly, right now with this administration, Hal, is they're telling you what you need to focus on, and people are believing it.
Well, that's what Trump does. Trump leverages crazy to get things he wants done.
Yeah, right. These there's not going to be anybody, including me, they're not going to say unfestered, every pilot swim across the river, immigration is not a good idea. You're not going to get me to do that. But I also know that last summer or early last year, Biden, probably even he was aghast at what was happening, or somebody did, they cut back on that dramatically. So the problem in Chicago is nowhere near what it was, but there are people that will say, no. This,
well, I think the only reason why the Biden administration did that, though, Tom, is because
whatever the reason was,
that the voters cared about, okay, and he didn't care about it.
I get it.
For a while.
What I'm saying, he didn't, and it was to a large extent, I'll use
only,
the term.
Only until he started feeling the heat on that and that it might cause his reelection,
I didn't say the guy was a saint. I said,
we don't even know if the guy was running the country.
Well, okay, right? Well, I'm saying is last summer, it changed from being a pretty good sized problem to a much lesser problem.
Yeah.
Yet the current group is telling you that it never changed at all. That it's still this massive problem.
Oh no, he dialed it down. I mean, he could have dialed it down anytime.
Okay, but name me one conservative on this show that will ever throw a pebble that way. And we're letting now. I'm saying, do we have too many people in government? You're not going to get me to argue that we don't. I mean, Wayne was on last week. What did he say? There's 18 agencies that gather information on other countries, NSA, CIA, FBI. I think you and I could make the incredible conclusion, Hal, that, boy, you know, if we did this right, we could probably get away with 16 or 15, right? I don't think 18 is the number. Is it one? Probably not. But my point is,
well, let's just say there's too many. How about that?
I know, but we're letting people define what we think is the problem. And people, are there too many people that work in Washington? Yes. If we fire half of them and just debase them as human beings and say they're all Democrats that wrote the wrong way and they never did a lick of work while they were there during the day, I don't think that's appropriate at all, because I think there's actually people who go to work for the government and actually do stuff all day long.
Well, I mean, there are, but you also got the rule that says, hey, you can work one day a month in the office. And what people do, what I would do in that situation is, if I was living in a cheaper area, collecting a DC adjusted salary, is I would fly in on the last day of February, work a day in February, the next day in March, and then fly back to my house in the mountains.
But today we've had people on, I won't accuse Kenny of this, to talk about all the people in all these other departments that all
they're probably also working some side gigs.
Okay, but I'm saying they're all, you're not going to get me to not say people should come to work. What I said is that a lot of employers don't realize the difference in cost between now and 5 years ago.
Yeah, oh yeah, I know, yeah.
Yeah. So having somebody, I think if you gave everybody, you needed to give everybody a 20% bonus if they got to go out and buy a car. But what I'm going with this is that the Bill Moriarty has gone a couple times, and Will again, my engineering friend, said that he's worked, now, Bill's an older guy, when I say older guy, he's my age, and he says that in his whole life he's worked with water engineers and highway engineers in the various states. He goes, he's never met a smarter, more up-to-date group of people that actually gave a crap about their jobs. Yeah. It's not everybody who works for the government's a buffoon. I mean, for somebody to even say that, plus we got a guy.
The thing I want them to look under the rocks. If you don't look under the rocks, you don't find it. So you have to look under the rocks.
I wonder if Musk is going to fire the guy that allowed his company to get $9 billion from outside sources, meaning the government. Talk about a guy, the guy in the dark suit telling everybody else you look black. Good Lord.
Well, I mean, but you got to remember, though, Elon is a recent Republican. I mean, he was getting those kind of kickbacks. And I recall you saying this during the previous segment, where why aren't electric vehicles paying road use tax? Well, probably because more than a year ago, Elon Musk was a Democrat. He made vehicles that Democrats wanted, and the last thing Democrats want to do is tax Democrats.
There's a name for him.
They're not gonna tax electric vehicle. They haven't had enough time with Elon's recent conversion to being a Republican. They haven't had enough to put those laws in place.
If you're so far on the edge as a narcissist, can you be a Democrat or a Republican?
Oh, yeah, you can. Because
just a name only?
The party that you're in is the party that's going to give you all kinds of kickbacks.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Right.
I mean, so it's all about, would you and I, with the budget deficits we have, okay, here, this is what, I don't know, I've been watching this stuff since I was in college, and so have you.
Oh, yeah, I've been, me too.
Most of the money, almost all the money that the government spends goes to citizens. doesn't go to salaries in Washington. I mean, granted, if we fire 1,000 people, do we save 1,000 salaries? Yeah, probably. But what percentage of that is the money? It's if somebody is getting money from one of these places, the guy who writes the check is not the criminal. The guy who gets the check that shouldn't get it, I think, is the criminal.
Actually, if you listen to what Walter Williams would talk about, he would say, he would disagree with you, Tom. He would say that it's theft because my body is my property. I'm the Hal Snar is the property of Hal Snar, and Hal Snar's labor is his property. And what the federal government does is legalize theft. This is Walter Williams. So the government goes, "Hey, Hal, you're not. We're gonna have you because we are a quote unquote democracy. We're gonna take a third of your income because it takes you until April to work off your federal and state and local taxes. We're gonna make you a slave, an economic slave, until April, and then you're free to keep all your money. And we're gonna take that money, and we're gonna give it to somebody else that didn't earn the money. We're gonna steal it." Walter Williams would say taxation, the way we do it, is legalized theft.
No, it's not.
It is, because Tom, if you were to walk up to somebody and say, "Hey, I'm going to take $100 out of your pocket, and I'm going to go and give it to this homeless woman so she can eat," you'd be thrown in jail for doing that. But the federal government can do that.
Okay.
They walk up to you. They can take the money from you via taxes. If you disagree, they might threaten you with an audit, and if you don't pay, you're going to be thrown in jail.
But there's we got to dash.
Legalized theft.
But there's a basis to this. You and I, even in your place in Idaho, all right. If all of a sudden the town goes from 25 people to 100 people, the 100 people are going to get together and say, "Hey guys, I got news for you. We need a stoplight," right? And if everybody gets together and says, "Okay, we need a stoplight. Oh, by the way, maybe we need a Barney Fife out here. We need a policeman because if somebody goes for a red light, we're going to want to pull them over. And oh, by the way, now we all have kids. We don't really want somebody to come through here over 40 miles an hour." All of a sudden, you all get together. This is the basis of democracy. You all get together and say, "All right."
Well, the problem with that statement, Tom, is we're not a democracy or a republic.
Okay, I'm saying the reason why.
And the founders of the nation thought democracy was disgusting, and it always led to tyranny.
Okay,
because the majority can always outvote.
The
majority can make Kentucky Fried Chicken illegal.
You're wondering. If the 100 people...
I know, but the democracy, the majority can make Kentucky Fried Chicken illegal because they want to prop up Popeyes.
Can you stay simple with me here for a second?
Yeah.
If the 100 people decide, okay, we're all going to kick in $20 a month to pay for the stoplight and for Barney Fife, and oh, by the way, we probably got to have a courthouse now. If you all decide to do that, the person who takes the $20 from you is not stealing it from you. You voted to do that.
If it's all voluntary and it's among consenting adults, have no problem with
that. It may, in fact, at some point, become less voluntary, and I agree with you. That you have to continually guard against. But the point being is, we're here together because you can't afford the stoplight by yourself, and I can't say I'm going to pay for the cop salary by myself because I can't afford it. But collectively,
yeah, but see, the problem I have is I have a problem with being a veteran and seeing how these wars are conducted overseas. I have a problem with the government taking my money and using it to make war with somebody. That's the problem I have. I have no choice over that. I have no way to say
well, you
no.
Sort,
I don't
you
want
sort
to.
Of do, but it's gotten to the point where we
if my federal tax form said, "Hey, list the things that you want to fund," I might be okay with it,
well,
but it doesn't. It just says, "I'm going to take your money, I'm going to use it however I want, I'm going to give it to whomever I want, and you have no choice over it."
Well,
we're going to finance
these
foreign
wars. We got
a
dash here, but
what
you're saying is the democracy.
What you're saying, Tom, is that government at the local level is the way we should run the country, because at the local level, we can easily vote people in and out.
Well,
and we can consent.
Okay,
we can't consent at the federal level.
Since we're after 8 o'clock, we can't today. But you and I can go in next week into what has, or anybody who thinks, all the people who argue back and forth all day long to the nausea, the MAGA guys versus the Biden's an idiot for the Trump's an idiot. Anybody who thinks that we are in control is out of their friggin' mind.
Oh, we're not in control. No,
so
we have very little.
So you're right. Who exactly is putting this money where they're putting it? And you know, I don't like we talked last show, who decided all of a sudden in every country in the world to start growing the money supply last July? Don't tell me it was Biden. Don't tell me it was Trump.
And it's growing at a quadratic rate.
Yeah, don't even. And it's not Musk. He's so worried about getting stuff for himself. He's not looking at that. Does the democratic process break down in a two-party system? I mean, come on. If you want to be real cynical, we got one more party than Russia, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. We could be all. Trust me, Hal. I could be more cynical than you if I wanted to be. I'm good at that. You know what? Let's see. We should try and
all you got to do is watch the State of the Union every year.
All you got to do is open your eyes. All you got to do is open your eyes. I mean, but
watch the State of the Union every year. They always say the same stuff, the same thing.
They're for motherhood.
Like
they
regurgitate and plagiarize the previous.
I'm gonna have a chicken in every pot. We're gonna have apple pie all around. I love motherhood. But what? It's the same crap, right? I don't know anything. Yeah. I mean, we get it. But how cynical are we gonna get? We could get there. We could be like Saturday Night Live. Get real cynical, right? Anyway,
Saturday Night Live was. I watched it, and it seemed like every joke. There may be three or four things that were funny, but it seemed like every joke was some sophomoric, vulgar sex joke that you would
think was funny. Well, back in the old days, that was TV. Did you ever watch Benny Hill?
Yeah. I mean, Benny Hill's, I think, a little different from this. It was a little more subtle. But the kind of humor that Saturday Night Live was peddling, I mean, these are 80-year-old guys peddling, you know, like jokes that were funny in eighth grade.
But I'm saying the stuff they replayed from those days, they were considered good skits.
Yeah, but the current stuff that they wrote, I mean, come on, let's get some new writers, because they were just recycled.
Well, it was like a regular Saturday Night. You liked some of them and some you didn't. But I mean, I liked seeing some of the people that I thought Lorraine Newman, she was terrific, saying what it was like when didn't. You know.
Well, I thought they should have introduced Kevin Costner. I saw him in the audience. He was sitting in the audience. I was wondering who he was sitting next to.
you're just miffed you weren't there.
Yeah.
Can you imagine you and me sitting out there with your lovely bride and Audrey? I tell you what, we'd have been stars if we'd have got tickets. If we'd have scored tickets for our girls.
Well, I think I might have been whisked away to a nice Gitmo vacation.
Oh God, I don't think you'd have been much more cynical than those guys were when they first started.
Oh, hey, you know the funniest thing I thought. The funniest statement I thought was when that actress said Saturday Night Live is contrarian. I don't think it's contrarian. I think it used to be contrarian.
It used to be contrarian.
It used
to
go against the state. Now it's like supporting the state.
Well, what do you call it? The Weekend Update is still pretty anti both sides. They're pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think for the most part, Saturday Night Live is pro state, pro Department of Defense, pro CIA. Pro-national security state. It used to be the complete opposite of that.
You see, Meryl Streep did quite an act for herself, didn't she?
Yeah, she was funny. She was funny.
She is funny. Who's the other lady?
I love Meryl Streep.
I can't remember the name of the other lady. Who was that?
The one next to her?
Yeah, the daughter.
Yeah, I don't know who that was.
Who were the two guys that were the total burnouts? the one guy.
No, that was Woody Harrelson.
Oh, all right, got it.
And the guy that plays the Mandalorian.
Yeah, Woody Harrelson was he the perfect burnout or what?
Yeah, he is. He smokes a lot of weed.
God. S&P futures up 24, NASDAQ futures up 116. Good job, Ricky, considering what you're dealing with us. I'll be back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.